Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we're going to have the latest on President Trump's diagnosis with COVID-19. And then we'll be airing part one of our candidate forum for the candidates running for the second supervisorial district, Joel Anderson and Steve Voss. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump have both tested positive for COVID-19. The president announced the positive test results Thursday night on Twitter, adding that he and the First Lady will begin quarantine and recovery process immediately, just 32 days before the election. Friday morning, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows confirmed that the president has mild symptoms. Mrs. Trump tweeted that she, too, has mild symptoms but is looking forward to a speedy recovery. At 74 years old, President Trump is in a high-risk category due to both his age and obesity. Diagnosis of COVID-19 raises concerns over possible exposure to many others, as well as casting uncertainties into the presidential campaign. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, among COVID-19 patients in their 70s, the death rate for those in good health at the time of their infection is 10%, and for those already dealing with a medical condition, the death rate is 32%. The president's illness follows news that his advisor, Hope Hicks, fell ill with the coronavirus after traveling with the president aboard Air Force One. Hicks, along with Melania Trump and other Trump family members, attended the presidential debate and refused to wear masks while in the audience, a violation of the debate rules. Now, it can take several tests to determine definitively whether those exposed have contracted the disease, but so far, Biden has tested negative, as has Vice President Mike Pence and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the next in line of succession. However, Republican Senator Mike Lee tested positive for COVID-19 just 2 days after meeting with Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett, who so far has tested negative. The COVID-19 diagnosis has forced Trump to cancel several upcoming rallies just weeks before the election. Future debates are also now thrown into doubt, though Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has suggested that if the president feels up to it, future debates could be held remotely. Get well wishes have poured in from both sides of the political aisle. Biden and Pelosi have offered prayers for the president and first lady, as have many Republican leaders, including San Diego Republican Party Chairman Tony Krivorek and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. The president has drawn criticism for traveling to a New Jersey fundraiser and potentially infecting donors and supporters there after he learned he'd been exposed to COVID-19 from Hicks. He has long ignored advice from public health officials, holding large rallies without requiring masks or social distancing, even after former presidential candidate Herman Cain died of COVID-19, believed to have been contracted at a Republican political event. During the contentious presidential debate earlier this week, the president repeatedly laid blame for 200,000 Americans dead of COVID-19 on China and claimed his actions saved thousands of lives. He insisted that his administration has done a great job handling the pandemic. But Biden hammered Trump for not taking steps that other nations took back in February and March, and for the fact that America has 4% of the world's population, yet 20% of the deaths from COVID, and 40,000 people a day contracting the potentially deadly virus. He alluded to Trump's taped statements to journalist Bob Woodward back in February that the virus was several times deadlier than the flu, and posed the most significant national security threat to his administration. Biden renewed his call since March to provide protective gear to help businesses reopen. Trump insisted that a vaccine will soon be ready, but Biden noted, "This is the same man who told you by Easter this would be gone away." Trump accused Biden of wanting to shut the country down. Biden said he would rely on the advice of scientists. He did not propose further shutdowns, but did advocate wearing masks, stating that the head of the Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, advised that if everybody wore a mask and did social distancing from now until January, we'd probably save up to 100,000 lives. Moderator Chris Wallace noted that the president has held large rallies without mask. "Are you not worried about the disease issues, sir?" he asked. Trump fired back, "Well, so far, we've had no problem whatsoever." But now that Trump himself is confirmed ill with COVID-19, numerous White House staff, cabinet officials, and supporters exposed at Trump's most recent campaign events and at the White House have also been advised to get tested and self-quarantine.
The president will have access to top medical care, fortunately, which may make his odds of recovery higher than for the many Americans who lack health insurance or cannot afford the high costs of treatment. The president's staff has indicated he hopes to continue running the country and that he anticipates a swift recovery. Now, the Constitution contains requirements for how to handle contingencies should a president become unable to serve due to a serious illness. If the president were to become incapacitated, such as occurs when patients with COVID-19 are placed on ventilators in induced comas, Vice President Mike Pence would become the temporary acting president. This has occurred in the past when presidents have undergone surgery. Should the president succumb to COVID-19, the vice president will become president until the election seats a new president in January. Because voters technically elect electors, if either Trump or Biden were to become a victim of COVID-19, the Republican or Democratic Party could nominate a replacement nominee, and the Electoral College's electors would then determine the outcome of the election. Alternatively, Congress could vote to delay the election until ballots with a new nominee could be prepared, a costly proposition for state and local jurisdictions. Given the partisan divide between the House and Senate, however, that prospect seems unlikely. If an election were thrown into such chaos that determining a winner was deemed impossible, the House of Representatives could ultimately determine the winner. Even though Democrats control the House, however, there's no guarantee of a Democratic victory under that scenario, since each state delegation has only one vote. And of course, any such chaotic election would likely be challenged in the courts, with the Supreme Court potentially casting the deciding vote. Meanwhile, voters in many states are already casting their votes on mail-in ballots, while the year 2020 has just become even more chaotic and unpredictable than before. Welcome to our virtual forum for candidates in San Diego's 2nd Supervisorial District. It is my great pleasure to welcome former State Senator Joel Anderson and Poway Mayor Steve Voss, who's also the chair of SANDAG. We thank them for participating, and we thank the many of you who sent in so many wonderful questions. We also appreciate the Facebook Journalism Project for funding our virtual candidate forum series. I'm Miriam Raftery, the editor of East County Magazine and moderator of tonight's forum. Our co-host is John Sepulveda, who will also be our timekeeper. I would like to start with letting each candidate give an opportunity to give us their opening statements. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you'd like people to know about you and your goals if you're elected to be the next supervisor. Mayor Voss, let's start with you.
Thanks, Miriam. I'm Steve Voss, mayor of Poway, running to be District 2's next supervisor, aka the mayor of East County. I'm honored to be endorsed by Supervisor Diane Jacob and three of the four other supervisors, by the majority of mayors in the district, the majority of council members in the district, and a bipartisan, broad spectrum of leaders countywide. I also mention I'm endorsed by the Cal Fire Firefighters, Deputy Sheriff's Association, United Domestic Workers, Laborers, Local 89, SEIU, and by Father Joe Carroll. That support comes because they know as supervisor, I'm going to put people before politics.
Okay, I just lost a second here.
That means ensuring every neighborhood is safe from crime and wildfire, making sure all people receive equal treatment, protecting and caring for seniors and veterans, prioritizing quality of life with parks and open space, and continuing Diane Jacob's fight against sex offenders being dumped in East County. As supervisor, I'll address homelessness by increasing funding for mental health and addiction treatment and implementing effective programs to increase housing for the unsheltered. Under my leadership as Mayor of Poway, we're building affordable housing for senior veterans and the developmentally disabled, investing in renewable energy, expanding recreation facilities, trails, and open space. We're San Diego County's safest city. We balance our budgets and maintain a fiscally responsible rainy day reserve fund. During COVID, we've served 9,629 meals to vulnerable seniors, provided picnic tables to restaurants to allow safe outdoor dining, and we've opened our parks for socially distanced workout and worship. My family's been in East County for three generations. My wife, Corey, and I have four kids and six grandsons. I pride myself in getting things done with an independent, nonpartisan approach, and I'm delighted to be here with you tonight.
Senator Anderson, let's have your opening statement, please.
Well, I've lived in East County for over 40 years. I raised my family there. I grew up there. As I grew up, there were career opportunities. Housing was attainable, and it was a great place. And now, as I talk to my friends, they have to visit their grandkids. They have to visit their children out of state because we failed to build the houses. We failed to create the infrastructure. We failed to give the career paths that made East County so great when I grew up. If all the politicians weren't lying, then we would be living in a beautiful community where all this stuff was there. Look around. Are the roads in the best repair? Are our kids living and having the same opportunities that we have? I think the answer is no, and it shouldn't be that way. I think that when people promise us to build roads and we agree to tax ourselves, that money should be spent on our roads, not diverted elsewhere. When people say that they're going to step up for veterans and fight for them, I think their votes should reflect it. But sadly, that's just not the case in San Diego today. And we deserve better. And my motto has always been, it's my job to make government work for you. I want effective, efficient, and accountable government. Some of these things we haven't seen in decades.
Very good. Thank you so much. We're going to move on to the first round of questions now. You'll have 2 minutes apiece to answer. This week, we reached a sad milestone nationally of 200,000 people in the U.S. dead from COVID-19. I would like to hear your views on how the county has handled the COVID-19 pandemic, and are there any ways that you believe the response should be changed as far as, you know, the shutdowns, the enforcement of rules, the distribution of relief funds, or whatever else you would like to weigh in on the COVID-19 issue? And Senator Anderson, you can go first on this one.
Sure. So last Tuesday, Jim Desmond proposed opening up all of the businesses and facing down the governor. Whether you agreed with his position or not, the fact that nobody on that board seconded the motion, so there was no debate in the public's eye. We have no idea what's going on. People want to address COVID. They want to fix it. Nobody wants anybody to die. But how do we trust and believe the politicians when the goalposts keep changing? First, they said it was about building herd immunity. Then it was about nobody should get sick. Well, I'm concerned that we're never going to get out of this rut unless we actually use medical science to solve it and not political science. You have to know where the sources are coming from so that poor businesses who have played by the rules, who have done everything correctly, are now being told that they have to close. Just this last week, we learned that Parkway Plaza here in El Cajon is defunct. They're not going to be reopening. They're closing. The people have gone out of business. So where do locals go to go shopping moving forward? They have to go to another city. Where are we going to go to get jobs and opportunity? This is the wrong direction. We need to protect people who are high risk and vulnerable, but it shouldn't be at the cost of herd immunity. I think we can achieve both. We sent a man to the moon over 50 years ago, and yet this county is completely stymied by the simplest of decisions. This isn't hard. It just requires medical science. And that's why I'm really proud to have the endorsement of the San Diego Medical Society, because I have a common sense approach and plan to fix this issue. We can move ahead, but we got to move ahead together.
Thank you very much, Senator. Mayor Voss, let's hear your views about the handling of the COVID-19 crisis.
You know, I don't have all the information that the County Board of Supervisors had, so I'm not going to second guess their response, but in a perfect world, congregate care facilities would have been buttoned up or really bubble wrapped much more quickly when COVID struck. It's been clear from the beginning the elderly are particularly vulnerable. Same goes for the Latino and other communities of color. COVID's impact has been tragically disproportionate to those populations. Over 60% of the positive tests have been Latino. Nearly 50% of the deaths, yet they're only 33% of the population. Now, there are numerous factors, density of population, in some case, frequency of border crossing. But more than anything, I suspect it's because often our frontline essential workers, are they? They've been on the job nonstop due to the pandemic. Rhonda Felder, one of the county's own social workers, is a sad example. Her commitment to her job, her commitment to the kids that she was watching out for, cost her her life. And again, not to be a Monday morning quarterback, but I would have liked to have seen more testing sooner, quicker results, more PPE available for congregate care facilities, for frontline workers, quicker recognition of vulnerable populations, and in general, more information, more details on outbreaks. If the county has information and details that might be helpful, they should share it. Other jurisdictions have, and I think it's been appreciated. We can't keep the public in the dark. Now, there are ways the county's been doing a pretty good job in tough circumstances. The county was the first and only for a while urban jurisdiction not on the most restrictive level. And remember, our hospitals haven't been overrun. Our ICUs have maintained capacity. We have plenty of ventilators. It could have been much worse, but it's not over yet. I think it's a mixed report card for the county, some things we could have done better, and certainly much to learn from.
Our next topic is wildfires. With the Valley Fire, this is a reminder that despite many upgrades in our county firefighting efforts that have been made under Supervisor Jacobs' watch, we still have the potential for a major firestorm. During this fire, our county still had no night flying aircraft of its own, despite the forecasts of Santa Ana winds and the potential for the fire to burn into San Diego. All they had was San Diego Fire and Rescue, which will only come out with a little helicopter if houses are actually burning or in imminent danger. Is it time for the county to invest in its own night flying, water dropping helicopter or helicopters? And are there any other steps that you would take to improve wildfire prevention or wildfire response for the San Diego region? Mayor Voss, let's hear first from you this time.
Sure. No question, nighttime's often the best time to fight a fire. There are lower temperatures and lighter winds make it an ideal time to attack, but a very challenging time to fly. Thankfully, Cal Fire statewide has two, they're called Hawks, twin-engine helicopters for firefighting on order, but they cost $144 million each. Needless to say, when they're delivered later this year, they're going to be in high demand statewide, and they'll provide Cal Fire a weapon that they've never had before. I'm thankful that we have the agreement with San Diego Fire. They have a few twin-engine nighttime choppers, and the county's had a use agreement in place with them, I think, since 2014. So there's hope on the horizon. Why don't we buy them? Again, $144 million. Keep in mind, fires in East County come with unique challenges because of livestock. The Department of Animal Services and San Diego Humane Society Emergency Response Team did a phenomenal job during the Valley Fire. My wife trains and volunteers with them. She was sending me pictures from the field as they headed towards the fire line to save animals, horses, cattle, zebras, goats. I was pleased to be able to get Lakeside Rodeo Arena open for evacuated horses and Poway Rodeo Arena on standby. Times like this, East County comes together as family, and that's a blessing for everybody.
Thank you. Senator Anderson, let's hear your views on wildfire protection.
Well, I moved into my house 32 years ago, and after the first month of living there, I was evacuated. I live in a fire zone. I live in Harbison Canyon. We rarely there's a fire in San Diego County that doesn't come through my neighborhood. So this 2 weeks ago, we lost power for 12 hours. I know what families go through. I was there for the Cedar Fire. I was there for the Horse Creek Fire. I've been there for every major fire because I live there. I know what it means, and I know the importance. I went back to Governor Schwarzenegger because 1 year before the Horse Creek, the tanker that normally is parked in Ramona was set on a schedule. And I went back to the governor and I said, it should be based on the risk of fire, not on a calendar date. And so we were able to get the tanker to come down almost 8 weeks early. And sure enough, we needed it and we had to go through with it. I was there with Duncan Hunter when he was trying to get Cal Fire to work with the military. that the military had assets and we couldn't coordinate those assets between the two layers of government, federal and state. So I understand firsthand what this means to our community. There's a lot more we can be doing, but I also think that we have to be thoughtful and we have to take personal responsibility. When a county prohibits us from clearing land that we know is fire prone, that's harmful and it's unnecessary. I believe that as your next county supervisor, we'll use some common sense to ensure that people are safer where they live and addressing fires moving forward. Closing eaves on people's homes, that's important. You know, in Ramona, we have a great fire service, but in Ramona, there's a lot of places with your satellite, you can't see where you're going because the satellite system doesn't work. And yet we've allowed signs to fade. So if you're a fireman who's not familiar with the area, you can't find the street to turn on to get to those houses. We can do better. We need to do better. We deserve better.
Currently, the county has no homeless shelter in the unincorporated areas or services. The county is talking about converting a hotel. As we speak tonight, La Mesa City Council is having a hearing on something the county will be voting on tomorrow about putting a homeless shelter in La Mesa. They want to convert a hotel and have it be transitional housing, not only for La Mesa's 50 or so homeless, but to bring in 150 or more homeless from all over the unincorporated areas, which is controversial to La Mesa residents. So my question out of this is, what do you think the county needs to do to make sure that homeless people across East County have access to shelter and services while also minimizing the negative impacts of homelessness on residents and businesses in communities? Joel, go ahead.
The county keeps talking about homelessness and saying that they want to address it. But yet, in the middle of a hepatitis outbreak in the homeless community, it wasn't until people died that they started to step up and do what they should have been doing all along. I worked with Senator Bell to get a $200 million pilot program for San Diego County on mental health. That money could have been used to triage the homeless and help them get off the streets. And yet they used only 3 million of the 200, and 197 had to be returned to the state. Look, there are resources out there that we could be doing stuff. And we don't have to put these facilities as dumping grounds on communities. East County Transitional Living Center in El Cajon wanted to expand, and they went to the county, and the county said, oh, this is fantastic. We want you to do it. And it took them over 2 years to get their permits. If we really cared about these issues, we could, without using county money, simply streamline what other organizations, other nonprofits are doing and doing well. 92% of the people that enter and stay for a month graduate with a job, with a house. If their families are broken up, they work with CPS to restore their families. These are good things. These are things that we should really be behind. But when you say you're going to streamline permits and you delay them for 2 years, you're not serious about the problem. And dumping it into somebody else's neighborhood is not necessarily the answer. We are our paths to move forward, but everyone loves to talk about it, just don't like to do it.
Mayor Voss, your views on the homeless situation?
Well, there's no question homelessness doesn't respect city boundaries. And we need to treat it that way. And yeah, some people do just want to talk about homelessness. I was out at Lamar Park weekend before last, met with residents who've taken it upon themselves to keep that park clean, led by a young man by the name of Braulio. They've been dealing with this firsthand. That park's been cleaned out multiple times, tons of trash cleared and hundreds of tents removed. But the encampments always came back because there hasn't been anywhere else for the homeless folks to go. Finally, there's some new hope. Over 300 homeless folks, 304, I think, from the unincorporated area are now in county-funded hotel rooms. That leaves roughly 260 known individuals who've been engaged by aid workers in District 2. As long as there are still folks on the streets and in riverbeds, we got more work to do. I believe we need to explore repurposing the old county assessor building in El Cajon for short-term or perhaps senior housing. We should look at old motels or industrial properties we can buy and repurpose, but they have to be placed right. We need to solve the now emergency housing problem, the intermediate or transitional problem, and the long-term need for housing. A tent or tarp isn't a home. Of course, housing has got to come with mental health and addiction treatment services. We've got to treat the entirety of each individual's needs. You know, we can and we will make a difference. You know, one more point. Something that's often misunderstood is that most homeless do have income. In most cases, enough to cover monthly costs of a tiny home. If we can build those homes, and we can, for about $50,000 each. So I think we need to see more exploration of the tiny home concept. Think outside the box and give these folks a chance and a place to start over.
Thank you for sharing that. On housing more generally, how would your approach be to meet the needs of our region for more housing? There's a critical housing shortage statewide as well as locally, especially for affordable housing. And yet at the same time, be mindful of that fire concern. A lot of readers have voiced concern about a project or two approved recently and another one in the works that has only one, you know, one route in or out for fire and was listed actually in the EIR as a severe and unmitigatable fire risk. And yet it would dump, you know, lots of traffic onto an already congested highway. So I'd like to hear, number one, your general approach to, you know, where and how you believe housing should be built. And secondly, are there some red flags for you if something's a severe and unmitigatable fire risk with just one way in and out on a major highway that others use for evacuation? Do you think that should be something that where it should just go back to the drawing board, or we should maybe not consider something like that? Steve, I think you're first on this one.
Well, you have to remember that roughly 80% of the unincorporated area is in a high fire prone zone. So any blanket denial of housing permits in those areas would essentially be a moratorium. And that would impact not only large scale projects, but single family homes as well. And affordable housing would be crushed. I don't think anybody wants that. What we really need is balance. Areas with limited infrastructure in the backcountry may not be safe to put homes. Areas closer to urban centers, villages or corridors like the I-15 may be more suitable. You know, maybe we need to take another look at our general plan. There have been significant changes from Sacramento over the years since the last general plan. Vehicle miles traveled are now a critical benchmark as opposed to what it used to be, greenhouse gases. Might need to have a fresh look at where development is best and safest. But I'm always going to lean on our public safety officials to guide us towards what's best and safest when it comes to development. I'm delighted to be endorsed by Cal Fire firefighters. I have a good relationship with them. We need to make sure that we've got the best standards when it comes to the fire code, defensible space, building requirements, evacuation plans. You know, because of improvements to the fire code, homes built today are much more likely to survive. I think we need to revisit the idea of grants to retrofit older homes. The greatest danger is homes not built to modern standards, enforcing defensible space requirements, chipping programs. Give folks who are already there the tools to survive. And remember, fire is not limited to the backcountry. Ask the folks in Scripps Ranch, ask the folks in Carlsbad just a few years ago when the fire west of the 15. You know, the MSCP, Multiple Species Conservation Plan, was a big win for the region. All the parties were brought together and thousands of acres of open space have been preserved. And there's now a North County MSCP that's being worked out. We can redouble our efforts with this. Poway alone, we've increased our open space by nearly 500 acres in the last couple of years. And we already have more space as a percentage of our land mass than any other city. So no one's going to be more vigilant than I in protecting the wild areas in the county than me.
Thank you very much, Mayor Voss. Senator Anderson, let's hear your views on how you would address the housing shortage.
So I believe that we have to use some common sense in our approach. I wrote a bill with a Democrat, Senator Wiener, and what the bill said is, if a developer wanted to build high density, low income, and they were gonna build it within a half a mile of a trolley stop, the city or the county would have 90 days to approve that project. And the reason why that's important is because we've learned through studies that as much as 40% of the cost of a home is associated with government and how the government addresses it. And kudos to Steve. I think that Steve's city is 33 or 35%. Good job, Steve. You're not 40, you're not the highest, but that's still not good enough. We need to get that down much lower so that people can attain this housing. And when you think about low income and high density, these are the people most likely to use those trolleys. And if we build those in Pine Valley, if we build them in Alpine or Ramona, those people are not going to have a chance to get to a job or a place of work to maintain and stay where they're living. I want to lift people and give them opportunity, but that means that we can't set them up for failure by putting high density, low income where there's no public transportation. And the notion that somebody who purchased 40, 50 years ago in the backcountry, and now they're being forced out of their home, well, that's just wrong. So I think that we can accomplish this. I think there are simple things that we can do, but I'm always shocked when I see that the county is approving low-income, high-density in areas that has no that they have unreliable public transportation. And I know that Sandag's a big fan of the trolley, but we're never going to have a trolley out to Ramona, I hope. And we're not going to have one out to Alpine. And no one's going to take that trolley, because I don't know about you all, but if I get on the trolley in Spring Street, in La Mesa, that's over an hour drive in order to get me to Petco Park. So if we're really going to do this and we're going to extend that distance, no one's taking a trolley to get to the emergency room or a doctor's appointment. They're not going to take the trolley to Costco to get 35 rolls of toilet paper. It's just not physically possible. So we need to think about those who live in East County already, who pay their taxes, paid for the road on more than one occasion, yet never received it. And now we're penalizing those folks. So I think there's tremendous opportunity. I think that we can do it, but we have to be willing to stand up against bureaucracies that steal our money and never deliver on roads.
Protests over racial justice and policing issues have rocked our nation as well as our region. Can you tell us briefly how you would address the concerns of those who are protesting over racial injustice, particularly as it pertains to policing, but also how you would go about making sure that public safety is protected, you know, including if you want to address police funding issues that have been much in the news, sheriff funding, I guess it would be in the county. Senator Anderson, I believe you're first on that one.
Sure, I'd be happy to. While I was in the legislature, there was a big movement to stop funding police. And they had severely cut back all the post money, which is all the money used for training. And I was the vice chair of public safety, and I went to the chair and I said to her, I said, don't we want the best law enforcement possible? And she said, of course. And I said, well, cutting their funds and limiting their training leads to bad outcomes. We should be increasing the money so that they have ample money for training so they get the very best training possible. Look, there's over 1 million people in law enforcement. Are there going to be some bad eggs? Absolutely. There's not 1 million people in any industry that there aren't some bad eggs. But that doesn't mean they're bad people. And I do believe that everybody should be treated with respect. I'm very proud to have a Martin Luther King Day Bridge Building Award. And that's because I've always put people first. And we should polarize on this issue. I don't know of anybody in East County who believes it's okay to handcuff somebody and watch them die. I don't know of anybody who supports that position. But getting better training, recognizing when someone's in distress, treating people with respect are all good things that we should expect. And not only that, but all the law enforcement I know, they would welcome the opportunity because they have tough, tough decisions. You know, in El Cajon, I forgot the poor gentleman's name, but he was having a mental episode, and he took out a pipe that looked like a gun barrel, and he was shot, and it was sad. But we didn't have enough PERT teams. You know, PERT teams cost money. I think that we only have 3 for the county. We should have significantly more so that when you have a 5150 call, this is a mental health call, you have somebody there who's properly trained to talk that person off the wall so that we're not having bad outcomes. I believe that after the La Mesa rioting, I was very disappointed I wasn't still in office, because every Saturday I would have had an open house and invited people to come in and tell me about the issues. Some of the concerns are absolutely truthful. Some of them are not so truthful, but we need to get to the issues that we can fix, that everyone agrees on, and we need to change that behavior. You're not going to do it if you have press conferences and you're not sitting there listening. Now, Miriam, you know that I had 8 coffees each and every year when I was in office, and I did a lot of listening, and people came, and I didn't hide behind staff. You could ask me any question, and then we chased down answers. Who's doing that now? We need to be continuing to do that. If we want to solve these issues and these types of issues, it's going to be coming together and talking and coming to solutions. It's not about platitudes.
Thank you so much. And just as a timekeeping note, we went over. I'm just going to remind everyone, if they can, if it's up, if maybe the chat didn't go through, but just keep an eye on that.
And John, if you could post on the right,
you could post 10 seconds
and the name of the candidate, so they'll know, you know, which one. Okay, Mayor Voss, could we hear from you on the racial justice and police funding issues?
Sure.
And public safety.
Well, first of all, I fully support the Leon Williams Human Relations Commission. As a matter of fact, I've recommended a Poway High School grad to serve on it. Austin Jones, he participated in some of the protests here in Poway, and that's how I came to know him. I recommended him for the Human Relations Commission because I wanted somebody from his generation, from his life experience, to have a seat at the table and a voice in the effort. And I'm eager to see what Austin and the others come up with. I look forward to their suggestions and recommendations. I also support the creation of the County Office of Equity and Social Justice. As to systemic or institutional racism, there's no question there's massive social inequity in our nation. Blacks and other people of color or minorities generally have lower income, lower education achievement, and we need to address that as a society. I believe the first most important step is improving education in the urban areas. Perhaps we can partner with the private sector or faith communities to increase mentoring programs, cooperate with corporations to increase career technical education. We've got to do better. We need to change. I don't think what we're seeing is some short flare-up as we've seen in the past. We're seeing sustained emotion and anger that will continue as long as these tragic incidents happen, as long as select members of our society are treated unfairly. We've got a long way to go. But let's never forget, 99% of our law enforcement officers are good and honorable. And they're more anxious than anyone to root out wrongdoers and bad apples. There are opportunities for improvement. Increased de-escalation training, absolutely. But no amount of de-escalation training would have protected those deputies in Compton a few days ago. There are people out there who intend to do bad things. With regard to funding of the police, defunding, I don't support that at all. Anything that's going to weaken or diminish our ability to respond is a non-starter for me. However, I think what's happened to teachers over the years, being saddled with broader responsibilities than educating students, that same thing has happened to our law enforcement. There may well be an opportunity to move some of their responsibilities to other providers without impacting public safety. But do we have problems? Absolutely. Is there racial profiling? Yes. Terrible and tragic incidents? Yes. Bad actors? Yes. We can be better. There's work to do.
As a matter of fact, I just want Joel to know that the name of the man who was shot by El Cajon police is Alfred Alongo.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad.
Okay.
Very sad.
Moving along, some of our readers have asked us if either of you have ideas on how to revitalize the Far East County, meaning specifically areas such as Hacumba, Boulevard, Campo, you know, the southeast sector that often seems to be forgotten. And those little towns are really kind of, you know, withering away. They were having trouble before COVID, and it's become even more challenging. What would you do to assist folks out there in that region? Mayor Voss.
Well, number one, I think you've got to ask them, What's that look like for them? Some folks live out there because they like it different. You know, I've been to Supervisor Jacobs' coffees a couple times at the cafe in Barrett Junction. I don't think they want anything to change there in terms of revitalization. But when I became, actually when I joined the city council and when I became mayor, my phone number has always been public. I encourage people to call me. I have coffees all the time with folks. They can reach me. And it's kind of funny because there are times folks call me and I'll answer the phone. There'll be a long pause on the other end and people will say, well, I didn't think I'd really reach you. Well, that's what I'm there for. If they want help in some of those communities, I'm going to be there. I'm going to work with them to see what we can do as a county to move them closer to what they want to be.
Senator Anderson, what are your thoughts on that southeast sector of East County?
Well, I've actually had coffees out there, and I've gone out and spoke. The 94 Club used to meet out at Barrett Junction. And, you know, Steve, I hope that you had an opportunity to have their fried chicken, but their famous fish fry is awesome as well. And I agree with Steve. I think a lot of people choose to move out there because they want a different type of life. Until they complain, I don't know that I'm going to complain. There are plenty of issues that they have out there, but it's not necessarily about revitalization as it is about maintaining roads and signs and treating them with respect and making sure that the emergency services are loaded with diesel. When we had the Witch Creek fire, I had to go out and get a tank of diesel donated, and we went to all the emergency services that the county is responsible for because none of them had diesel. So you had phones that people could use, but no electricity. You had all sorts of stuff, but no electricity because the diesel wasn't there to run all the generators. Some of these simple low-lying things, that's what's most important in some of these communities because that's where they believe that their safety comes from. So I think a lot of this has to do with listening. I'm really proud that I spent so much time in the district meeting with folks, going out, talking. I never turned down an opportunity to speak because it was an opportunity to listen. So I would continue that. And as they have problems, I would like to address them.
Developer donations have been a concern for people in several East County races recently. Each of you have taken some money from development interests. Senator Anderson, you know, you certainly have. And Mayor Voss, you're endorsed by the Building Industry Association. Senator Anderson, when you were in the legislature, you had low ratings from the environmental groups, a zero from the Sierra Club. So my question would be, what would you have to say to those people out there who are concerned not only about, you know, having more housing, but also the people that are concerned about protecting those open spaces, parks, trails, wildlife habitat, you know, where once it's gone, it's gone. Joel, this is your question first.
Well, first of all, if a person makes a donation, it doesn't mean they own your vote. It simply means that there's something about you or something about your stance that they support and they want to help you. I've taken money from both sides of every issue. I have no litmus test and I don't ask people because if I were to ask a person, why are you giving me money? Then there would be an association and an expectation. So I think it's important for people to understand that's not how most people work. They work because they're going to do the best job that they can do. And if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And as far as their donor dollars, having said that, I'm really worried about our housing. I'm worried about other things. Just this last year, $30 million the county spent on an additional preserve. We have a homeless problem. We're not even addressing our neighborhoods. We have gridlock. We have all these issues. And we're still spending taxpayers' dollars to take property off of the tax rolls so that we have to pay higher taxes to maintain our roads instead of allowing that. Now, look, I like open space. I like parks. But you know what? When you talk about this, most of the community, including the county, doesn't have a climate action plan. So how can we say we're taking this seriously and that we care about it? Poly doesn't have it. County doesn't have it. Some of the other cities don't have it. Some of the cities do. That's the first stop. Let's get a climate action plan in place, because there's monies available at the state if you have an action plan. If you don't have it, you can't even apply for that money. That means that your constituents have to pay higher taxes to get the same services that that the city next door who has a plan can apply for.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for interrupting me. I can't see anything, so I apologize for the time.
Your views on, or your thoughts on the open space and protecting natural areas.
Sure. First of all, I want to correct something that you said. Yes, I am endorsed by the Building Industry Association. So is Joel. They did a dual endorsement.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
You bet. Number two, in terms of open space, look at what we've done in Poway in the last couple of years under my watch. We've increased our open space by nearly 500 acres. If you combine all the open space that we have in Poway, you could fit the entire city of Santee just in our open space, the entire city of El Cajon, just in our open space. So I take open space very seriously. But having said that, I will never forget the feeling of buying my first home. It was an incredible thing. It was the American dream come to life. I want other people to have that opportunity, of course, in the right place, a safe place. But as Joel said, you can't buy somebody's vote. There have been cases where when people have made online donations to me and they've said, this is in support of such and such project, I've returned it. Thousands of dollars I've returned, because that's not the way I operate. But I'm always going to make sure that projects get a fair hearing. I'm going to listen to all the evidence and make sure that we preserve the opportunity for folks to enjoy the American dream. And I believe a big part of that is home ownership.
Thank you very much. San Diego County's jails have the unfortunate record of the most deaths of any county jail in California, which has also triggered some lawsuits against the county. It's a problem that's gone on for years, even though Sheriff Gore has repeatedly said he would investigate and make improvements. What can be done about that? And do you think that it's time for the county to commission an independent investigation? Mayor Voss?
Well, first, one death is too many. We shouldn't get into some morbid calculation of how many deaths are acceptable or appropriate. The county did just have a recent independent outside analysis of the jail operation. I think the organization, Community-Oriented Correctional Health, something like that. Same folks that analyzed Rikers Island in New York. I plan to drill down in that and consider any recommendations made. You know, one thing I know from just glancing at it, the report mentioned that initial assessments made at the time of booking are essential. It also said that in order to reduce in-jail mortality, we've got to be in a position to refer high-risk patients to appropriate settings, and including emergency rooms. There's a debate that's going on now. Should we outsource medical care of our charges, or keep it in-house? I'm going to be anxious to see those dueling proposals once they're developed, and I'd like to be part of the conversation. We got a lot of good folks working hard, caring for that population. We need to be certain we're offering the best possible care. I understand the concern of families that are worried about their loved ones in custody. My dad committed an armed robbery as a teen and spent time in county jail. He also spent time in federal prison. Thankfully, he turned his life around and went on to do great work to keep other young people out of prison. My point is, we have a moral responsibility to offer a safe environment and appropriate care to those in custody so they can go to trial or pay their debt to society and have the opportunity to get their life straightened out and lead a good life that contributes to society.
Thank you. Senator Anderson, how would you address the issue of the deaths in county jails?
So we went through this with our state prisons, and we had a third party come in just like, and they had recommendations, and those recommendations were very, very helpful. I believe that we should address it in the same way. There are three elements that generally pop up. One is when somebody's in your care you're responsible for the health, and you have to think in those terms. Secondly, the assessment, the initial assessment to figure out underlying conditions that they may not be aware of. And third, proper training so people recognize it and follow up on it. Those were the three main elements, and it made a huge difference. And I believe that that would make a huge difference in our jail system.
Let's move on to talk about Sandag and transportation climate change issues right now. The county has been repeatedly sued over not doing enough to meet the state mandates on climate change. And at the same time, you have people in East County who want those highway improvements to get rid of gridlock and so forth. How would you balance the transportation needs of East County residents against these mandates for greenhouse gas emission reductions, you know, against the backdrop of Sandag having that weighted vote, of course, where East County is the minority and San Diego and Chula Vista have the majority. Senator Anderson,
sure.
You're first on this one.
You asked multiple questions within one question, and there's not enough time to address them all. So let me just say this. We voted to tax ourselves because we were promised roads. Then Sandag diverted that money to the trolley. And it's wrong. Those roads should be built. And spending another dime on more studies for environmental studies without any money behind it to create the road is a waste of our tax dollars. We've already gone through most of these studies before. They've expired because there's a time frame on all these environmental studies. And yet we're proposing again another $92 million towards those environmental studies without one dime to actually build the roads. Look, you're not going to be able to run a trolley out to Alpine or Ramona. And even if you did, it wouldn't be feasible because it just doesn't go fast enough. And no bike lane is going to solve a problem when someone's trying to get to the emergency room or they're trying to get to Costco to buy 50 rolls of toilet paper. So when we look through this, we need more transparency, more honesty. And yet we know with the most recent audit that we're getting anything but transparency or honesty from Sandag and its executive director. The executive director has been running amok, and yet we have heard nothing from the board trying to rein them in or correct it. We deserve better. You know, everyone can talk in platitudes and they can be really slick, but we need people who roll up their sleeves, work hard, and deliver on their promises. It should be their job to make government work for us, and yet that's not the case, and it's wrong.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Mayor Voss?
I worked closely with Santee Mayor Minto, El Cajon Mayor Wells, San Diego Mayor Faulkner, and some other East County leaders to budget the $92 million that Joel is talking about to improve Highway 52, Highway 67, the 94-125 interchange. All of us would disagree that that money is not going to be well spent. I'm absolutely committed to completion of those projects promised to voters in the Transnet Initiative in 2004. Expanding transit's important also, particularly in the densely populated areas of the county. But in Supervisor District 2, for example, the Grantville neighborhood is definitely well-suited to transit, given its location near SDSU and the new SDSU Stadium complex. However, other areas of the county, particularly the farther east you go, need those improved and expanded freeways and highways. Most of the district is in that category. And as supervisor, I'm going to continue to fight that fight to maintain critical funding for East County freeways and highways. Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about the five big moves. There are some interesting concepts there, but the price tag is an eye-popping $177 billion. To give you some context, for that amount of money, you could buy two Teslas for every single family in the county. That's crazy. Also, the first draft of the plan doesn't even take into account the impacts of the pandemic, new work from home trends, decreased transit ridership. But for now, in general terms, we need to keep the promises that Sandag made decades ago, especially the 94-125 completion, expansion of the 67. That's critical for public safety. Until and unless those projects come to fruition, there is zero chance the public would support any kind of tax scheme to pay for the new bells and whistles in the big five moves. You can't keep taxing people for things that you don't deliver.
A lot has been done to improve fire safety regionally. However, with the takeover of the transition from the Julian Volunteer Fire Department to county fire control, some people up there have voiced concern that when CAL FIRE gets dispatched to a fire somewhere else, Julian has at times been left bare with no engine in the town to respond to structure fires. This actually happened when I was covering a town hall up there and all the equipment went down to fight a fire way down in Ramona. Ambulance service is sometimes coming from an hour away. So my question is, will you pledge, if you're elected, each of you, to, number one, ask to see those response times for medical and fire for Julian before and after the transition, and if they're, and to hold a town hall or a meeting up there in Julian with the residents to honestly assess whether they're better or worse than before and fix any issues if there are some. Mayor Voss, you can lead off on this one.
I'd lived for a time in a small town that had an all-volunteer fire department, so I know that volunteer departments are often a source of pride, and in many ways they bind communities together. I've also read old news accounts of how contentious the changeover was, but I wasn't following it in real time because for most of the time the battle was going on in 2018, I had no idea that I'd end up running for supervisor. Even the special election that they had in Julian took place just a couple weeks after I decided to run for supervisor. I've heard anecdotally, and some of that from you, Miriam, that there were some problems with the changeover. Look, nobody's going to know Julian as well as longtime residents, but just recently I checked with Supervisor Jacob's office, and they indicated there hasn't been a single service complaint to their office in all of 2020. But if there are problems in the future, as I mentioned before, I'm an easy guy to reach. I would be happy to hold a town hall up there to discuss it, see what the feeling is about the service they're getting, make sure we're doing it right.
Thank you very much. Senator Anderson, how would you address the concerns that some people in Julian have on the fire issues? Hello, Joel, we lost you. There he is. Okay.
Yeah, I know because somebody was calling me. I actually put my phone number on every ballot I've ever run on, and I don't mind giving it out. It's 619-204-2200, and it's, you can find it on the web. I actually do give my number out, and people do call me. It's not a shtick. So out there, the biggest issue to me was that the county never invited the police chief, the fire chiefs, to put their own plan together. See, it's not about one team or another. It's about getting the best team to respond to the issues. Now, some of the volunteer folks, there's an issue because they have to have additional training. Some of those folks didn't want that additional training because it comes with additional responsibilities. However, I know that we lost a lot of good people. Not everybody has to be trained to the highest level. And I know, just like you, I've been out there. People have told me. There's a lot of concern. But there's concern on both sides in that community. It's not just one-sided. And I think that the response times absolutely have to be looked at. And if they're falling short, we need to fix it. Everybody in this county pays taxes. Everyone should have equal opportunity for the same public safety net. And I would be working really hard. Living in a fire zone personally, I really understand what it means when you go to bed at night and you know a fire is near, and you're wondering if you're going to be safe or not. So absolutely, I take it very seriously.
Listeners, you can tune in on Monday for part two of our Supervisor Candidates Forum. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.